Hello, everyone, and welcome to our TV and movie reviews podcast brought to you by TPENetwork.com. I'm your host, Hank, and joining me via Skype and Discord, first on the line, we have John. How you doing?
Hey, everybody.
And we have Amy. How are you doing, Amy?
Oh, pretty good.
Excellent. This time we're going to be reviewing Captain Marvel. It's going to be a spoiler-filled review, so if you don't like spoilers...
Warning, incoming spoilers. Warning, incoming spoilers. Warning, incoming spoilers.
You've been warned. As always, we start out with settings. So, John, I want to get your take on the Kree homeworld, Hala.
I really like the setting of this. It's very good to finally get a base from what we've seen from the Kree all this time, and now we finally have something. I mean, but it's your typical, you know, futuristic space age kind of world. There's nothing there that really stood out that specifically said, "Hi, I am Kree."
I like that. If some little side character would have done that, that would have been amazing.
Well, I mean, if you want to compare it against like Xandar, I mean, they're pretty much, except for Xandar had a kind of almost like a stable, like that bursting star kind of logo. And you kind of saw that in some of the architecture. But besides that, it was relatively the same, you know, just spaceships flying around, like, you know, just your typical futuristic city.
Amy, what were your thoughts?
I think it was kind of interesting to see a new aspect of the Kree civilization, because the main two places we've seen them so far in the MCU are in Guardians of the Galaxy, when we were mainly introduced to Ronan the Accuser and we knew he was kind of a renegade. And then, of course, in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., where we knew about the Kree in different, you know, different ways. So we kind of got the impression that they're not just one. The civilization has different groups involved in it and different ways of relating with other civilizations. So it was kind of interesting to see the capital and how the Kree are governed and what kind of structure they have. And yeah, so I feel like a lot of it was sort of opaque, even though we've seen a lot about the Kree before. Kind of went in not knowing what to expect from him, and I kind of liked that.
Let's switch focus to their time on Earth. When they were on Earth, did you feel like you were set in the time frame? Amy, I'm going to stick with you.
Yes, right from crashing through a Blockbuster video. That was the best way to start it. I loved it. I really did feel like they were trying to evoke a lot of that era's movies. You know, they had the surfers out on the beach that kind of made me think of Baywatch. And then they had when Kara falls through the roof of the Blockbuster, she picks up a videotape and it's the right stuff. And then, of course, they have references to Top Gun. You know, they did all this stuff that really set you in that particular decade.
John, what did you think?
Oh, I think Amy's hit all the points right on the head right there. It definitely pulled you into the 90s, you know, having grown up, you know, having all three of us growing up in the 90s. I don't think that they really left anything out. I mean, they even got the cars right.
Oh, I loved the references to grunge. I kind of liked the music, how they didn't always hit the songs that I would have expected. And some of them I knew and some of them I didn't. And it was like, oh, wait, I know that's, oh, that's a good choice, you know? So
yeah,
I did like that.
I really, really liked the soundtrack for this. I mean, I agree. There's probably some songs that they could have filled in there as well. But you know what? It was pretty good. And you could definitely tell that they were trying to take a note from Guardians of the Galaxy whenever they put this together.
Definitely. Good point. Let's switch over to characters, since that is usually where we spend the bulk of time. We'll start out with Carol Danvers herself. I went into this movie with a little bit of, I don't know, I guess I had some expectations on how things should have played out for her and her character. And then I had heard rumors of certain things about acting and stuff like that. But I didn't see any of that. I didn't see any of the issues that I was told were going to pop up with her acting. And I was pleasantly surprised by her character. I'll get to what else I have to say later on in the episode. But John, let's turn it over to you. What did you think of Brie Larson's portrayal of Carol Danvers?
I felt that she really wasn't over the top, which was very, I'm very grateful for her not doing that. I mean, there's a lot of the other stars that they have who are like, you know, from the MCU, primarily like Robert Downey Jr. And Chris, who's playing Star-Lord, you know, you know, sometimes they could be really like, you know, in your face with the character. And she really didn't seem like that. She more along the lines, I felt like, you know, she was along for the ride just as much as the rest of us watching her.
Amy, let's get your thoughts on her.
I really like that way of putting it, John, that she's kind of along for the ride. They sort of just kind of drop you straight in without knowing what's going on and not knowing too much about the character. I mean, I knew enough to know she looked awesome and I was very excited. But the trailers didn't really show a lot of personality, so I was a little concerned that there wouldn't be much, but I could not have been more wrong. She is a well-developed character. She's snarky and self-confident, but not like Tony Stark overconfident. You know, she's not difficult to work with and not super reckless. She does take risks and break the rules. She's sort of like, kind of like a happy medium between Tony Stark and Steve Rogers. And I found her an interesting character because she does change and grow over the course of the movie, but it's more like she learns to trust herself when other people are telling her, no, 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 you shouldn't do that. And she's like, nope, I know what I'm doing and I'm good at it. I'm going to do it. So I found that to be kind of compelling rather than the horribly flawed person learns how to be better. It's more about learning to have confidence in her own judgment and abilities.
Good thoughts. We're going to move on to Samuel L. Jackson. And I really, really, really liked his character in this movie. I mean, it's more of the same, but it was a reimagining of the Nick Fury character prior to him lacking a sense of humor and stuff like that. As he's grown older in the MCU, it seems like he's more down to business and stuff. So this was really refreshing to see him, you know, be a lot more upbeat and humorous. And he was a great sidekick on this one. So, John, what were your thoughts?
You know, I heard that the last time that he was funny, he lost an eye.
Not bad.
No, I really did. I liked it too. Definitely hitting home. I mean, the entire time I watched this, I know I've said this to all of you guys, and as soon as I got done watching shows, I felt like I was watching an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episode that just seemed to be like longer. Like, he definitely brought that feeling of, you know, what the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. did, you know, home, and he played the part perfectly. I couldn't have asked for anything more that we got out of him. And we also got, you know, a couple answers of, you know, why he, you know, I guess, why he favors Coulson over a lot of things, why, you know, he ended up with the eye that he has, or the eye patch, I guess I should say. And, you know, it's it was really good seeing him taking a more relaxing role, or I guess more fun role. You think you're right about saying that, with instead of him being all serious and more like doom and gloom whenever he is the more Nick Fury from like the shows that we have now.
Amy, let's get your perspective.
Well, I agree. I think it was kind of neat seeing Nick Fury as a primary character rather than secondary. I mean, he's played major roles in a lot of MCU movies, but this is the first time that you could say he was like equal footing with Brie Larson, I think. And I felt like he really shines here because we're getting to see Nick Fury before he enters dang kids get off my lawn mode when he gets older. And he's funny and interesting and but also sarcastic, and you know, you see who he becomes and you see who he was and how that connects. And he was funny. I loved his interaction with Carol Danvers. It was just delightful to watch.
I'm going to move on to Jon Rogg, and that was the Jude Law character. I found him to be really pompous from the get-go, and it left nothing to the imagination of what his character's arc was going to be, just because he was giving off that sense of arrogance and entitlement, and just like he was a straight up jerk. Like somebody said, hey, play the biggest jerk you've ever heard of, and action. And he just went through with it. So I did not like the character, and I did not like the portrayal of the character. I think they should have gave him some more latitude to make him likable. So when the turn happens, it actually hits you in the gut. Let's start with John on this one.
Yeah, but you really liked it whenever he at the end was like, you know, this is it. This is what I want. And then she just blasts him into the rock. Two thumbs up for that.
Yes, that was funny.
Yeah, no, everything that you said, I really don't have too much to add. I mean, it was, you knew what he was, like, pretty much from the get-go, and nothing seemed to really change. I mean, I wish they would have given him a little bit more, considering that he was the person in charge of that entire group. I feel that their commanding officer would have been a little more lively, but oh well.
Amy, what were your thoughts on Yon-Rogg?
Well, I think you raised some good points. I think he served the role that he needed to play in the movie. If he were the central villain with no other main antagonist or conflict, that would have been a problem. But I think he did fine, and they certainly do make you not like him, which is, for a villain, I think that can be a good thing. It depends on how you do it. But it was very, very satisfying to see him defeated in the end. And I had no real problems with him. He didn't stand out as anybody particularly memorable, but it was fine.
All right. Now, let's talk just briefly about Maria Rambeau. I really liked the character, and I'm kind of glad they didn't keep her on screen very much more, because she was really likable, and she was starting to overtake some of the scenes she was in, because she was so believable. And I think it's a good thing that they may have dialed back her role a little bit in the movie. But what a great ensemble cast overall. Amy, what did you think about Maria Rambeau?
Oh, agreed. I liked her so much more than I thought I would from the trailers. I think you're right. Just the right amount of her. And it didn't leave me wanting more, but I think that's a good thing here. And I would love it if we got to see like a future her down the line. I don't know if that's going to happen, but that would be cool.
John, what were your thoughts on Maria?
I liked her. I mean, I actually even liked her daughter almost as much. And you're right. I'm glad they waited to almost the end of the show to put her in there. Although I do feel that her entire getting over the fact that the Skrull were in her house, you know, that went over real easy, as well as she's like, you know, oh, I'm piloting this Quinjet out in the space, you know, but I'm cool with that though. I feel that she let it all like sink in really easy. Besides that, I think that, you know, the person who they got to play the character, and, you know, you're right. You know, you got a lot of feeling. You got that hurt, the fact that, you know, she thought that her best friend was gone. So,
all right, let's talk about her daughter, Monica, who could play a pivotal role in a future iteration of that character. Did you like her daughter, Amy?
Oh, yeah. You know who she reminds me of is Scott Lang's daughter in Ant-Man. Because she's kind of like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be a superhero someday. And I can feel like Monica strikes me as that same kind of kid. Like, lots of really good ideas, super creative and smart. And, yeah, she's got a lot of spunk and attitude. And I would love to see a future version of her. And it was also really, really touching, some of the things that she remembered. It really kind of brought home that whole idea that Carol Danvers had a life, not just a best friend, but kind of a second family.
John, any thoughts on Monica Rambeau?
I'm looking it up. Who does she end up becoming?
Photon.
She becomes Photon and Pulsar. Wow, I didn't realize that. Okay. I really did like the her. I like, you know, all of her, the banter she had. And I'm looking up her character now because I'm trying to remember what she called her. She called her Lieutenant what? Like Lieutenant Mischief or something like that?
Trouble, I thought.
Lieutenant Trouble, yes. So, and the names calling back and forth and, the entire, like, I got the ketchup on the your flight jacket. All of it was perfect. Perfect for a little girl to play like that.
Yep. Adorable enough, but thankfully they didn't go too far over the top. All right. We are just going to cover a few more, I guess we'll kind of cover. We'll get to my disappointment on Agent Coulson in just a minute, but Agent Coulson was in this and he didn't have enough breathing room for me to really judge how the character was, so to speak. I mean, he had some pivotal points, obviously, but John, what were your thoughts on Coulson?
Well, I mean, he was like fresh in S.H.I.E.L.D. So, I mean, I can't see him being like all like even close to the Coulson that we currently know now. I do wish that we had a little bit more time with him, and instead of him more or less just kind of like looking like, what do I do? But I mean, we got him. I mean, it's what we've been handling for like ever now. And I mean, regardless of the, he didn't have that much speaking role, he was in an MCU movie, and we did, and that's all that we were asking for like what, like 5 years now, 6 years now?
Good point. Amy, any thoughts on Phil Coulson?
I was just really happy to see him. Not nearly enough of him. But again, we had kind of the Nick Fury, Carol Danvers show going on here. There wasn't a lot of room for him. And I think I'm okay with that. At least we got a few little hints on how did Coulson get from here to there. And I did love the moment where he kind of let Fury slip past him and pretended he hadn't seen him, because that shows how he builds a rapport with him later. So it was nice to see him. I will take whatever I get. But yeah, I was a little sorry there wasn't more.
All right. Any other characters you guys want to touch on before we move along?
Ronan the Accuser. I feel that he should have, you know, I guess, stepped up. I mean, when we end up seeing him in Guardians of the Galaxy, he's like crazy insane and just angry at the world or the universe. And in this one, he was more or less like, you know, oh, yeah, we're going to exterminate these people. And then he's just more along the line, just standing around being like, okay, I guess we should go then. I feel that he would have left, but he would have slung some Kree, you know, words at Captain Marvel.
Yeah, so that was a little over the top, I thought. But all right. Well,
I mean, over the top, I feel that he was under the top.
No, like, I mean, really... I mean, his reaction to seeing her force was a little over the top. Like, it was a little overstated because he didn't really even buckle to Thanos. So, you know, he kind of thought when he had the stone, like, he was like, oh, yeah, I can match with Thanos. You know, you could tell in his demeanor, like, he was thinking about giving it a whirl. But on this one, he was like, we're out. Peace.
And before we jump off, and Marvel, I can't remember what her human name was going as. Dr. Lawson. You know, I mean, considering that we saw her so many times throughout the entire movie, that was a real good twist there whenever we find out what's going on and like what she is. I feel that they kind of put her in there as being like almost like the mother character to Captain Marvel. You know, she was someone that she looked up to and that she kind of like, I mean, she dreamed about. So, but I mean, I feel that they did a good job with their people picking for this movie.
All right, let's move along to some wins. One of the wins I have would be the cast. I mean, this is an amazing group of characters. Definitely not trying to take away anything from Brie Larson, but you could probably put a paper cutout as the lead in some of these scenes with these great cast members and make it work. It'd be hard to fail with that many good people, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Amy, why don't you give us a win?
Well, yeah, I think you're right about the ensemble cast is really the best part of it, I think. You have a bunch of good guys that you really find yourself rooting for. You really want them to succeed. And we didn't talk too much about Talos. And I found his story pretty compelling. I was actually pleased to have a few small plot twists I was not expecting. Did not know where this story was going to go. And I always like being a little bit surprised.
John, do you have a win you want to share with us?
I like the fact that we have shown now that it's not just experiments with the Mind Stone that we're able to see if these stones can grant powers to other people, where in this case, it wasn't necessarily pulling directly from the stone, but it was all the banked energy. I mean, they did such a good job with being able to net all these older movies together to be able to make everything that we just saw and how she became Captain Marvel, you know, make sense. You know, all the way from the discovery of the Tesseract, you know, from the Hydra agents being able to encase the energy and then knowing that the U.S. government picks that up and then, you know, and has that equipment, which we end up seeing in the Avengers. But so we know that Marvel was able to be able to take that attack and advance it and be able to make an even bigger battery with it. The fact that they're using the Tesseract itself for a ship that is faster than light travel, because that makes it, that is something feasible. It makes sense. I mean, it's one of the only objects in the entire MCU that can do that. And if you apply that energy towards the ship, then it could totally, I could totally see that being a thing. So, you know, I like how they took the original MacGuffin and they brought it back into the limelight just to show that all the stones are good, but our original MacGuffin is still the insert word here.
All right. Amy, any other wins?
No, I just want to add on to what John said there. I really, really liked their use of the Tesseract. I think it tied all of the different movies together really well and connected them to Infinity War and Endgame in a very satisfying way, because you feel like, oh, yes, there is a common thread moving through here. This explains a little more how it works. And it fits well into the MCU rather than just being a good standalone movie.
All right. Any other wins, John, before I turn to some problems I had?
I mean, the movie in itself was a win, being able to, have a Brie Larson. Amy, I'm pretty sure that I'll start this. I'd actually like for you to finish it, because you're the one who posted the tweet about it. But having, you know, basically Brie Larson being this this actress that's, you know, here, you playing this lead role, and in no way was she all sexualized or anything. She was there to play a role, and we all loved her for that, and didn't even look like twice at her into that. And you're right. I didn't think anything of it until I read that tweet, and I was like, you're absolutely right. That there is nothing that we just saw her for the character that she was playing, and that was it.
I'm going to go against that, because that is one thing that's really irking me about movies in the last several years, is that we're focusing so much on gender and color and stuff, and we have thrown under the rug Alien, Terminator, Resident Evil, Tomb Raider, Rogue One, Silence of the Lambs, Twilight, Hunger Games, Gravity. You know, like we've had excellent, excellent female leads that we never said, oh, this is amazing that this woman is leading a movie. It has never been an issue until just this last, like, I don't know, 5 years. It's strange to me.
Well, I have some comments on that, of course. And I think my best way of explaining my thinking here is back in the 90s when I was first discovering video games, I played my very first role-playing game, which was Dragon Warrior 3 on the original Nintendo. And then I found Dragon Warrior 4, and oh my gosh, you could play as a woman. It didn't change anything about the story or the dialogue or anything. It's just a little 8-bit female. But somehow that made a difference to me, just being able to imagine, you know, just see that reflected in it. And I think that alone is a good thing. And I think that it works if you're not making a huge deal about, oh, that's her defining trait, she's a woman. No, you just need to have good female characters along with good male characters. You know, I just like seeing a variety of people who look different, because that's the way the world is. That's really what it's about to me.
Yeah. And I'm not disagreeing with that, but but I think everybody is forgetting all these movies I've listed.
Which is a fair point. You know, there's amazing stuff out there.
There have been fantastic female and black actors since before I was born. I mean, people act like Black Panther was this revolutionary movie and stuff. And it really is like a spit in the face of Ben Vereen and Lou Gossett Jr., Richard Roundtree, Nichelle Nichols from Star Trek, and Dennis Haysbert. I mean, these people we've had people doing these roles for as long as I've been alive, longer than I've been alive. And I'm just a little annoyed that we're focusing on that stuff. Personally,
it's a good point. You got to remember your roots, remember where you came from before you can appreciate where we are now and the people who got us here.
Exactly. And it's nothing new to me. I mean, to me, it's like, I don't go by that. I don't go, let me bring Amy on the podcast because she's a woman. I'm like, no, let's bring Amy on because she's good. Let's bring John on. Why? Because he's a white male and we might get more white male listeners. No, John's good at what he does.
John just knows a whole lot about the comics.
Yeah, him and Alex have forgotten more about comics than most people will ever know. Period.
Exactly.
And to me, that's the one thing about like Black Panther and this movie is like, let's not forget that we've been there, done that. We've had some great ones lead and nobody said, Sigourney Weaver, she's a woman. Why is she leading? And nobody said that. People were just like, this movie is freaking awesome.
Yes, it so was.
Let's do more of that. All right, let's get into some more problems. Continuity. You know, I'm a stickler for not following the comics because I don't want to follow the comics all the time. But in this case, they threw the whole book out. The Skrulls are good guys. Come on now, John, back me up.
I mean, technically, the Chitauri were supposed to be the Skrulls in this universe. So bringing the Skrulls actually into it, I mean, that doesn't mean that now that it's been, you know, 20, 30 years that after this, we're still not going to see Secret Invasion. Maybe they'll have enough Skrulls put together that there'll be some, like, you know, additional force saying, oh, we like this planet better than whatever it is, the one that we found. So I don't know. I was kind of fine with it. But the thing is, you couldn't also have a double bad guy. We know the Kree are bad. They've always been bad. What sense have the show or movie, have they ever been good guys in there? So, I mean, if they were the bad guys and then the Skrull were the bad guys, so then who really is going to be the bad guy of the whole thing?
What I wanted, though, from this movie was the Kree-Skrull war to be obviously spilling over into Earth, and then we're just caught up in it, not necessarily like picking a side. That's what I was a little personally disappointed with, but, you know, they made it work. And then another problem I had was just like the continuity overall. It felt like they retconned things in order to fit them in to this story. Instead of it naturally fitting.
Yeah, but they retcon like her story, like it still made sense. She got all her powers from the Tesseract, which was basically an experiment done by Mar-Vell. She still gets her blood transfusion from the person who we originally thought was Mar-Vell. So, I mean, all the things that are they're technically being done, just different orders and not necessarily all at the same time, you know, from the comic book. So, I mean,
counterpoint. How do you get the Tesseract?
Military has it. Military's had it the entire time.
So how does Mar-Vell get this from the military for her own private endeavor?
She's working for the military.
Military operation.
Mm. Yeah, she's working for Project Pegasus, which is basically their faster than light development, speed development. So they have this product. She says that I think I can do something with it because she's Kree. She knows, she understands it better than we do. And so she turns around and makes it faster than light drive. Now, the real question here that I'll just counterpoint your counterpoint with another counterpoint is how the United States government is like, oh, hey, where did our Tesseract go?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. That's the whole point of my argument is why would they leave it with her unattended? They would never do that.
That's a point.
That's probably something that I know it's going to get brought up, and there's either going to be a comic book or something that's going to fill in that gap, because there's got to be some way that she snuck off with it. Maybe she left like some like holographic image of one behind, and there she was able to run off with it. So yes, that right there, you're absolutely right. That's a plot hole that they need to figure out.
And then you're telling me that Nick Fury makes the Avenger Initiative because of this situation, but.
Oh, it gets the name from her plane.
But he doesn't use that pager when New York and the world are about to be destroyed.
Ah, you haven't been reading all the articles that have come out. Figgy's even said, how do you know he hasn't used a pager?
Mm.
We've never seen him actually use the pager except for this time.
That just is so silly.
Because he hasn't shown up right now is because they've been running it nonstop for probably a couple months straight.
That's silly.
Instantaneous, but no, hey, he at least made a point, because you're right. They can always just go back and be like, you know, oh, these other stories, you know, he pulled it out like he was going to push the button and we just didn't. But maybe he did.
Sorry. It's just silly to me. It just feels like it's just woven in to be woven in. And this is a movie that could have just stood on its own. This could have been your Aquaman or whatever, you know, just let it stand on its own.
Hmm.
In fact, I think some of the continuity issues hurt the movie overall, because this movie could have been just perfect had it not needed to be factored in to this. And so can you explain her abilities, John, then why she's so much more OP than Scarlet Witch?
Just the relative power of the space stone. I guess space is just more powerful than the mind. I don't know. I mean, How does it make any sense that anything that Scarlet Witch could do came from the Mind Stone? How does it make any sense that anything that, you know, Quicksilver could do came from the Mind Stone? Honestly, when it comes to these powers that are granted because of it, I mean, shoot, the Vision's alive because of the Mind Stone. I don't know how that all that works. We know what the stones specifically do, but when they grant individual powers, I got nothing there when it comes to that.
Amy, any other problems?
I just had one, which is me being nitpicky about the science because I read a lot about science and futurism and astrophysics. I don't see why a light speed engine would make a difference here. Now, of course, it could mean that what they were really trying to develop is a faster than light engine, which does make a difference. But at the same time, it's like, why do they need that to find the Skrulls a new homeworld? And it's one of those nitpicky things. It probably doesn't matter too much. And again, one of the answers you could come up with is it's a Marvel movie. Get over it. But, you know, it's one of those things like, but wait, that makes no sense.
They can find the crappier planets quicker. I don't know.
I don't know. Although it's possible the way they're currently getting around is through these jump points. It's possible that all of the habitable planets near those jump points are already inhabited. So they need a different way of traveling to find new pristine locations.
All right. Any other problems before we get to our rating and wrap this up?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Why? I had such an issue with the two planes that they have there. We have and the thing is, we have two experimental ships. We have a brand new Quinjet that no one's ever seen before. It's still basically in its shrink wrap and it's fully loaded with weapons. I might be able to get around that because it is eventually going to be a military aircraft. But why are there machine guns on a faster than light experimental ship? Why would you want to put guns on something that's an experiment and could blow up and cause, you know, why would you have more problems to it? And on top of that, it's being powered by the Tesseract. Why don't we have like Kree weapons or something like that on there? I mean, I feel that she could probably have gotten away with it. It blows my mind that basically, there, she's being chased by that Kree shuttle. What does she do? They're like, oh, open fire on it. No. Just lose the darn thing. Turn on the light speed drive and just disappear. You know, why are we trying to fight this Kree? And on top of that, why does the plane that is this very experimental have guns in the first place?
And once you shoot those guns, you'd probably just run into the bullets yourself.
Yes. With the Quinjet, that's where the Pegasus hangar is, that they're experimental stuff. I mean, it's not like you saw a bunch of Quinjets playing around. You saw that one Quinjet because that was what they're playing with. And it's not exactly something that the Air Force does. It's like, let's build a fully working prototype and make it fully loaded and ready to, you know, put into a fight with no problems whatsoever. Now, usually they, you know, after it's done going through all of its testing, then they'll put the actual weapons in it to, you know, and see if the whole package works. But that one, I could maybe get around that they had weapons on it. But yeah, the other one, no way.
Last thing I'm going to mention on problems that I can think of anyway is the way Fury lost his eye. I thought that was really anticlimactic. I thought it would have meant so much more if Skrull Coulson would have put his eye out. That would have meant so, so much more.
He trusted the cat. That's the last time he trusted somebody. He trusted the pretty cat, and the cat clawed his eye out.
It was kind of silly, though. It was, it didn't really. I was hoping for some like major thing where, like, you know, I don't know, like a being, a person doing it, cat.
I agree, but think about it this way: being that they've done what they've done now. Even if it was something bad or if it was something as dumb as this, do you think that Nick Fury would have said something any different either way? Because, you know, it doesn't matter. He would have been like, oh, it was terrible. You should have been there, you know, and instead it was him just being stupid.
Right.
I'm torn because I thought it was really hilarious. But you raise a point, but I don't think we can just leave this review, though, without saying I thought Goose was awesome.
He might have stole the show.
He kind of did. I've been seeing a lot of memes about this was the true hero of Captain Marvel.
He kind of was.
He was the Groot of this movie.
He's like OP.
Yes.
He's overpowered.
And apparently, so I looked the Flarkin up. So apparently, it's got a pocket dimension in its cheek. So that's the reason why I can just eat anything and it just disappears.
Oh, that's pretty okay. Excellent.
So, and there was like other things that were involved, like I guess in the comic books, like Rocket was the one who actually figured out what it was, and they're like, "You got to get rid of it. It's going to lay eggs." They're like, "It's a cat." And then all of a sudden, there's like 101 eggs laying around the house, and all these little baby Flarkins are hatched.
One really quick aside. When I got home from that movie, our cat was actually choking up, you know, how they choke up whatever that is that comes out. And it was like that scene in the movie when the Tesseract comes out.
Your cat was choking up Tesseracts.
And ooh, I was like, whoa. You might want to get
it checked out.
And then I saw a ghost red skull float by. It was all good. All right, let's get to our rating. We've run long. What are you giving this? Or do you want me to go first, since mine will probably be the lowest of the three?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. I think this was a really fun movie. I cannot forgive some of the weird continuity stuff. And your lack of Coulson is most disturbing. So I am going to give this a proficient 8 out of 10. John, what are you giving it?
I was going to give it an 8 out of 10, too. How do you see? How is yours supposed to be the lowest?
The way you've been hyping this movie up, it sounds like you're going to give it a 20.
Well, I mean, look what we're comparing it against. I mean, if we're going down the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you know, it's up there, but it's still not like in the top.
All right, Amy?
It's definitely not an Iron Man.
Amy, where are you at?
Well, I was going to give it an 8 out of 10, too, because I know I've been super hyped for this movie, and I came out of the theater totally satisfied, had a fantastic time. But there's a difference between how much fun you had in the movie and when you really start hammering down the details and saying, okay, how well did they do this? So I think it was very good. If you want to know my rating of fun factor, that would be closer to a 9. Like, I had a blast.
Yes.
But yeah, if you want me to be very accurate about what I really, truly think about how well they did, yeah, 8 out of 10.
Okay.
But wow. Captain Marvel's awesome. Let's just, I had a blast.
I figured both of you were going to at least go 9.95. So, all right. That is great. And I can't go lower than an 8 because the cast, and it was really, really well done. Mm-hmm. All right. Any final thoughts before we wrap this up?
I think that what they did leading into the next to end game, I mean, couldn't be any more simpler than that. And the entire last credit with Goose, I mean, their music selection there at the end with a hole and the all the credit scene. Yeah, I mean, I was extremely satisfied for that entire ending. So that's about it.
That's what I would say. The mid credit scene has me really hyped for Endgame now.
Yes, the Stan Lee tribute was beautiful.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Beautiful. That was just the perfect way to handle it.
Love that man. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait. That's, hold on. Before we go, that's right. I got to toss out there the new continuity issue with Stan Lee playing Stan Lee in the movie, reading the script for Mallrats, where he goes in Mallrats to talk about the Incredible Hulk and his other superheroes. So basically, he's telling the future of what's to come in the MCU.
Yeah, that is a problem.
I missed that. That's a little too meta for me.
Oh yeah, it got deep. I was reading some of that. I'm like, that's absolutely true.
Hey, John.
He's playing himself, but
John, special delivery.
What package from Mr. Stank?
Oh my gosh, this is great. On that note, we are going to call it a close on this review, the spoiler-filled review of Captain Marvel. Next month, we'll be back with probably the biggest movie we've ever reviewed, and that's Avengers Endgame. Oh my goodness. But for John and Amy, this is Hank. Until the next time, we're signing off.
See you, everybody.
See you next time.
Tiger Prince Entertainment.
There ain't nothing else like it.